We start, though, with our own Tom Temin, who is there's no truth to the rumor, Tom, that you were kicked out of the hotel at ERMCO in Cambridge, right? That's not true?
Absolutely not true. I deny it completely.
Okay. Because that rumor had been circulating earlier this morning that you had just been gently asked to leave, but I wanted to make sure that that wasn't the case. Seriously.
No, but I did check out on time just in case.
Seriously, though, you're on your way back to ERMCO, and you'll be back in studio with Jane Norris tomorrow morning on the Federal Drive between 6 and 10. But what is it? We've had folks, Jason's still at ERMCO, Chris was down there yesterday and the day before. What is it about ERMCO that is so important and attracts the power level of people that it attracts?
Well, I think one of the things that's really attractive about ERMCO is the fact that it's almost all government. I mean, there are vendor sponsors there. They're only allowed to send a couple of people. So this is one of those conferences where the government outnumbers industry. And you can see it in the gatherings across agencies, little knots of people during the networking times, agency to agency, government to government, really being able to talk.
As somebody who's been observing this stuff for a long time, as you're headed away from ERMCO today, what do you take away? What has been maybe an event or a quote or something like that that's left the biggest impression on you as being newsworthy from the people who are participating there?
Well, the biggest event had to be, I think the highlight of the show really has been the speech by John Berry this morning. And he didn't say anything we didn't already know, but he said it with such astonishing passion that people were clapping, and I, you know, the people at my table were saying, "Wow, he's good. Wow, he's good." John Berry said that he would swear to God that he's going to end the KSAs as a way of screening people initially to apply for jobs in the federal government. And he said that he's got 900 presidential intern candidates all screened, ready to go. And he's told agencies, if you hire all 900 of them, I will double it, and I will provide you with 1,800 next year. And if you hire all of those, I'll provide you with 4,000 presidential management interns the year after that.
And what is the timeline for those? What do those people become? Are these people who are potentially future SESers, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. Yeah, they come in and they learn the work of the agency and they become permanent employees, and eventually they could rise as high as they want to go in the federal government. They definitely represent the best of the brightest and so forth, as he likes to put it. So, yeah, John Berry was clearly a highlight. But I also spoke with a couple of other people. I spoke with Vivek Kundra, and he gave me a really interesting, and that, by the way, that interview is posted at, on the Federal Drive page, federalnewsradio.com. Vivek Kundra gave me a detailed analysis of what happens in TechStat meetings. And this is really where CIOs go if their program is not going too well.
Mm-hmm.
A TechStat meeting is convened, and a lot of people from across functional areas of government really grill the person until they come up with a plan for fixing the program. And he told me what goes on in those meetings. I thought that was fascinating.
That is, as you mentioned, available at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive. And to be honest with you, I'm going to do some ERMCO programming on in-depth tomorrow, and I may just steal that, if you don't mind, and get that entire conversation on the radio tomorrow.
Sure.
Between 1 and 3. Those are the kinds of meetings that I've heard about in the private sector, where you'll hire a consultant to come in, and they will tell you things about what they've observed that are sometimes very uncomfortable.
And it can be painful. Yeah,
yeah, sometimes really the exact opposite of what you want to hear. And yet, usually when you go back and talk to that executive 6 months or a year down the road, they will say, it hurt for the hour or two or three that it took to have that meeting, but the pain was mitigated by the success that we had. Is this what the goal of Mr. Kundra is, and is this what we can expect to see as a result of these meetings over the next 6 months or year?
Yeah, absolutely. He said that that's exactly the way it works. And he said they keep it from being ad hominem. That is, you know, it's not we against you,
yeah,
but it's simply here are the facts. Tell us your facts. And he says it's all fact-based, it's all a clash of ideas, but it's not people arguing without the facts. And so that takes the personal quality out of it. and let's just focus on the issue, which is getting your program back on track.
And that's the critical piece of it. I imagine the same thing happens in government that happens in the private sector sometimes, which is you get caught up with why did this happen, and you're looking at the past rather than we're in this situation today, what do we do to get things back on track?
That's right. And they focus on the mission and what they want to deliver ultimately to the public, and that's what keeps the whole discussion on track. Well, I thought it was just a fascinating look inside of that whole process.
All right. What happens to the folks who are at this when they get back to their agencies? If my boss is at ERMCO and he or she is coming back to the office tomorrow or Thursday, what might I expect to see differently about the way my agency works? Will there be some new ideas, do you think? Or will there just be opportunities to do things that maybe weren't there before? Or what difference will this make for people who attend?
Well, I think it's kind of like building up stalagmites, you know. There's no radical change, but bit by bit you build up those ideas, and over time you do see change. One of the sessions I went to concerned telework, and I spoke with a lady who works for the Patent and Trademark Office. Her name is, I'm looking it up right here as I speak with you. Yeah, that was Danette Campbell. She's senior advisor for telework at Patent and Trademark, and they've been teleworking for 14 years. And she said they started out with exactly 13 people. They are now up to 5,400 people, or 80% of their workforce that's eligible to telework does telework. And so she described the process by which she built the business case for teleworking. I think that's the kind of idea. There were a lot of scribbling of notes going on while she was speaking, so people can try that technique to try to get this whole telework idea jumpstart. So that's an example of the kinds of ideas that people hear and take back to their agencies.
All right. Well, but to be fair, I mean, and to kind of play the devil's advocate for a little bit, how many discussions about telework have we had on this radio station? Other outlets in the media have discussed it, cited the Patent and Trademark Office. What's different about this one than the 60,000 other conversations that we've had about telework?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's just it's right from the horse's mouth directly, and there's a chance to catch up with the person in person right afterwards. And really, and I saw her, the line of people waiting to speak with her. So maybe it's just the inspirational effect that it has when you hear them and see them in person.